Back together again, you and I chatting it up around the wireless Thursday style, March 20th, 2025, right here on Connecticut Today. I open the show with word of a so-called retail delivery tax being considered by lawmakers in Hartford. It would kick in at 28 cents per individual delivery and then be adjusted every year thereafter. Republican State Senate member Rob Sampson dropped by to chat about a recent op-ed posted by Democratic leadership in Hartford attacking him and his recent debates concerning key bills. And finally, as usual on Thursday, only in Bridgeport.com blogger Lenny Grimaldi dropped by to talk about the big stories around the area, including a no-confidence vote by the Bridgeport Police Union regarding Chief Roderick Porter.
So how many of you out there use what are called these dinner or dining delivery services? Now, you probably heard of them, even if you don't use them. And if you use them, you know what I'm talking about. Primarily, DoorDash and Grubhub. And if you don't use them, you get online or you get on the app and you say, okay, well, which restaurants work with these delivery services and I'll order. So you're buying the food. You're already paying fees for the driver, for him or her to come and actually deliver that. You're supposed to put a tip on. So it ends up being a little expensive from what I'm told. I've never used it. My son uses it all the time. I know people that do it. And it's basically, they're delivery services. And they're really popular because this is a side hustle for people, right? Well, the lawmakers in Hartford, and I really hate to keep doing this, but I have to. Because a lot of this stuff is going on, and I have to let you know about it. Because it just feeds into the insanity here. And again, I'm just going to be the bearer of the message here. Don't go nuts like you did yesterday with the bear hunting stuff. And boy, have I gotten some responses on that. We'll get to that later. A new bill would charge for food deliveries. Now, and that means charge on top of what you're already paying. I mean, my God, does the ruling class up in Hartford, do they get up in the morning and say, how can we screw people today and should we use any lube? I'm sorry, I hate to be that graphic, but you know what I'm talking about. Or for you guys out there, should we give the state another prostate exam, if you know what I mean? And yes, mine's coming up in June. Oh, joy. A new bill. Are you ready for this? Like, we don't get taxed enough. Like, we don't get screwed enough. Don't get mad at me. I'm just reading from Catherine Revelo's story. She's been on the show numerous times from the Inside Investigator. You ready for this? Honest to God, they got to go after this, too. A proposed bill would levy a 28-cent tax against delivery services like DoorDash and Grubhub with the potential for the fee to increase annually. Annually means, for those of you who don't know, every year. I know, right? You say to yourself, can they not tax something? No, they can't. The majority in Hartford, along with maybe some others, I don't know whether this has bipartisan support or not. I don't think so. They are genetically incapable of not slapping you and I with a tax. It is mind-numbing. You're already paying more, as you should, if you're using Grubhub or DoorDash or I think there's two or three other services that may be smaller in nature. The bill would impose a tax on quote-unquote retail deliveries, defined as a retail sale of tangible personal property by a retailer for delivery by a motor vehicle to the purchaser at a location in this state, comma, which sale includes at least one item of tangible personal property that is subject to sales and use taxes. The bill would direct retailers to add the tax to charge customers and identify it as a retail delivery fee to be listed separately from other charges. If the bill becomes law, they would start the screw job on October 1st. The tax would be annually adjusted by the Connecticut Department of Revenue Services in accordance with the Consumer Price index. So it wouldn't just automatically stay at one spot for a few years. The screwage or the screwing would continue. Do you get a movie and dinner first? Retailers would be required to file quarterly returns with the DRS to pay for the tax. Now, you may ask, well, what's the justification of this, Paul? You may say, hey, where is this money supposed to go? I'll tell you that momentarily. But we start off, honestly, with another tax. Tax, 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 tax. It's all they do here in Connecticut, the majority in Hartford. They nickel and dime you over and over and over and over and over again. 203-333-9422-333-WICC. So again, if you're wanting to use Grubhub or DoorDash, guess what? Those who govern us say, no, you've got to pay even more. So those who govern us, there has been a bill introduced by them. I tried to find out the exact reps or Senate members who are sponsoring this. It's just listed as a committee sponsorship by the Transportation Committee because they want money for the, you got it, the State Transportation Fund, right? We heard that. That's the standard excuse. Oh, we need more tax money for what? The Transportation Fund. I have an idea. If you want to get more money in the Transportation Fund, start charging people who own EVs a yearly or a monthly fee. Because guess what? They ain't paying the gas tax. And that's what should be fully implemented in the State Transportation Fund. But instead, they want to screw people, a good screwing of people, maybe without the movie and dinner, who use DoorDash and Grubhub. Really? Come on. We have to do this. The bill would impose a tax on retail deliveries defined as a, quote, retail sale of tangible personal property by a retailer for delivery by a motor vehicle to the purchaser at a location in this state, which sale includes at least one item of tangible personal property that is subject to sales and use tax. The bill then directs retailers to add the tax to a charge of customers and to identify it as a retail. Oh, my God. And it will go up every stinking year. Testimony on the bill during a March 10th public hearing was overwhelmingly, what a surprise, in opposition, and included groups like the Connecticut Business and Industry Council, the Connecticut Restaurant Association, and even the Greater New Haven Green Fund. Even some progressive groups say don't do this because you've got middle or low income people making these deliveries and you've got middle or low income people ordering the deliveries. The Greater New Haven Green Fund submitted testimony opposing the tax on peer-to-peer car sharing. By the way, they want to do this for those car sharing services like Turo, citing data showing that those services can reduce congestion, parking demand, and vehicle miles traveled by 50%. I'm telling you, I am sick and tired of it. And I know some people are going to say, well, it's only 25 cents. It's only 50 cents. I don't care. The damn nickel and diming in this state has got to stop. Stop treating people like ATMs. Like I said, you want more money for the State Transportation Fund. Take everybody out there who's driving an EV and is not paying gasoline tax into that fund. Charge them a mileage fee. I'm serious. Why do I have to pay a tax that goes into the transportation fund, and I gladly do it when I buy gasoline? Why am I expected to do it, and nobody who drives EVs has to do it? Explain that to me. How is that? Here's a phrase progressives love, equitable, the equity. Where's that? Turo, the car sharing company, also testified against the bill. The bill imposes a 3% tax increase on Connecticut residents. The legislation burdens folks who use peer-to-peer car sharing services by increasing taxes on all of them. They don't care. Turo, I love you. They don't care. They don't care because they're more concerned with medical coverage for illegals. Jeff in Westport's here. Jeff, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Hey, Paul. Great show. Do you realize that that bill they're trying to pass is also going to be, there's going to be a tax on like Amazon and UPS drivers because it's any product being delivered to your house.
You know, somebody asked me about that today, and you're the second or third person that's mentioned that. I got to check that out.
They don't want to talk about it, but it is. They want to add tax on anything delivered to your house. That means UPS, Amazon, FedEx, anything that's delivered to your house, they want to put a tax on it. Paul, you know what we need to do? We need to move down to North Carolina where taxes are like nothing, and there's a bear hunt down there.
Jeff, I got stuff on that. Thanks, Jeff. I got stuff on that. Oh, man, some of the emails I got. Oh,
I was like, should I forward this one to the cops? I mean, it's that bad. You got people. And we'll get to the bear hunt thing later. And you know what upsets me with that? People aren't listening to what I'm saying. Clean your ears out. Q-tips. Try them. They work. And that wax buildup for years. Tim in Hamden. Tim, good afternoon. How are you?
Well, does this include services like Instacart and everything where it's food and others being delivered to people? Does that include something like that? Does it include drugs from the drugstore?
Yeah, they're being very, I don't want to say shady, but they're being very circumspect. All it says is this, Tim, the bill would impose a tax on retail deliveries. So there you go.
Well, what it is, you know, it is a continuing burden on people, especially the disabled,
yes,
elderly and other,
yep,
people who, mm-hmm, can, you know, budget themselves with, you know, certain, you know, products that they get almost every week from places, and they can't, you know, it's hard.
They don't have a car, they can't drive, they're infirmed.
They don't have the mobility, all that sort of stuff. You know, that's what it definitely was. Oh, just before I go, I really would like to congratulate.
Yeah, here it comes.
You know, here it comes, yeah, absolutely. You know, the people, now that the Orange Man has taken over the Kennedy Center.
Yes.
And is going to be the host of the Kennedy Center.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Bring up, salute Meatloaf and,
don't mention Meatloaf. And, the guy's no longer with us. Tim,
they're talking about Elvis. Elvis and me. But, you know, I think it's important to really look at two things.
Yeah, real quick.
Presidential. Real quick. Look at that Laura Ingraham video of the White House Oval Office.
Yeah.
It's covered well. But, you know, to ban Harvey Firestein, I mean, I don't have anything against him. I don't really care, but that's what I thought he was going to solve the world's problems in one day.
Tim,
one day.
Thank you.
I
appreciate it. Thanks, Tim. Yeah, I saw he talked to Laura Ingraham. I didn't watch it. You people would be surprised how little television I watch. I try to keep up with what's going on, but people say, oh, did you see this on Fox? This was on CNN or MSNBC. Well, no. No. I listen to the radio a lot. I'm online a lot. And about the only thing I watch on television with any regularity is hockey. That's it. Well, this guy, our next guest, oh boy, he ruffled the feathers of the Democratic leadership in Hartford to the point where they wrote an arrogant, condescending op-ed wagging their fingers at him. My sense is he doesn't care, nor should he. Republican State Senate member Rob Sampson's here. Hey, Rob, it's Paul. How are you, sir?
I am doing great, Paul, and you're absolutely right. I do not care. I think it's very indicative of the fact that I think that they're feeling the pressure. I think they fully recognize that people across Connecticut are catching on to Republican values, and I think maybe they know they're losing ground.
Okay, so let's lay this out. So you recently said, hey, you know, we don't have time limits in our debates here at the State House and State Senate, so you may do what you think would be necessary to kill bad legislation. And Bob Duff out of Norwalk and Martin Looney out of New Haven, it was like you kick sand in their face, Rob. And they write this op-ed that the Connecticut Mirror ran basically being arrogant, condescending to the nth degree here.
Yeah, I mean, it's very telling when the two most powerful Democrats reduced themselves to take on just a random, Republican state senator. And, you know, what's remarkable about this whole thing, Paul, is that, you know, notoriously, I do talk a lot in the legislature, and I've been known to keep people there well past midnight
Good.
Into the early wee
Good.
Hours.
Good.
Fighting to stop bad bills, and I've had a lot of success about it. And just a couple of weeks ago, I was asked in an interview with Mike Cerulli, about that. And I told him, I said, look, when it gets down to the last few days of the legislature, the minority does have a lot of power. We can use our ability to speak and put forward hard amendments to make change. And they took such exception to that. It's so remarkable to me. I mean, we haven't even begun to get started in the session yet, and they already have their feathers up.
And I read almost all the entire thing line by line, commenting here on it, Robin. And it's funny to me. And it was almost comical. It almost read like something out of the Babylon Bee or the Onion when they used to be funny. And it was almost like, well, you know, behave or you know, we're so benevolent in extending the option for the minority party to voice its opinions here. And this comes like another day after they killed a bunch of energy bills from the Republican Party simply because, Rob, in some way they had an R attached to them. I mean, they have to be kidding here.
Right. I mean, it is remarkable to me reading that statement that they put out, the way they refer to themselves, as if, you know, because they're the majority party, they act as if they've always been the majority party and they always will be. I mean, it's such dripping arrogance and hubris in every comment to suggest that somehow they're allowing us to engage in open debate as if that's a generous gift that they're providing rather than just the process by which we operate in our representative system. And people should take notice that that's how they view their role. I serve in committees. I was on the Labor Committee debating bills this morning, and every day they inject themselves more and more into the lives of people, telling people how to live, telling how companies how to operate. And, you know, I keep asking them, I'm like, what is the compelling reason for this? Why does the state have to be involved? And they don't have an answer for that. They just believe that they were elected to be the god of everything and everyone's business, and they need to be taken down a peg.
Rob Sampson here, Republican State Senate member, the target of a rather arrogant and very direct op-ed from Bob Duff in Norwalk and also from Martin Looney in New Haven. You know, they threatened, Rob, as you well know, in that op-ed to, maybe get rid of unlimited debate and go to time limits. And I said here on the show, okay, then do it. Like Rob, call their bluff and say, if you're that worried about hearing maybe for long periods of time the opposition voice their opinion, then if you're that insecure, go ahead and do it. You think they would ever do that, or are they just blowing smoke?
It's hard to know. I mean, I almost feel like they wrote that as an excuse, as a precursor, as trying to legitimize the eventuality that they would make that decision.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to tell you, I mean, it's long been considered the nuclear option.
Yeah.
To actually do what's called call to question and stop people from speaking, you have to remember every person that serves in the legislature represents citizens.
Yeah.
And effectively cutting people off and not letting them speak is telling those citizens that they don't have a voice either. So for me, I mean, it would be extremely telling, and it's just shocking that they want to say that I'm abusing my role because I'm actually speaking on behalf of my constituents. And yet they would not be abusing anything by preventing someone from speaking. It seems completely reversed.
And Rob, I have to laugh too. This is the same party that worries about, well, you and other Republicans talking too much. Yet every couple of years when we get in the budget cycle, they certainly are not worried about delivering 800- and 900-page budgets at 2, 3, or 4 o'clock in the morning. So, Rob, I guess those late nights are okay, but the ones you and other Republicans may cause, I guess those are not. Funny how that works, huh?
Yes. Well, there's a long list of things that they do that create impediments for the minority. I held a town hall meeting in the town of Cheshire last night, and I amused the guests at that town hall meeting by just going through the long list of things that they do. I mean, you know, they give us bill language, you know, moments before we're supposed to vote on it. Sometimes, as you mentioned, it's hundreds of pages. It's still warm in the from the copier in your hands, Paul. I mean, it's like, oh, you're going to vote on this, you know, or they will take the worst bill in the world. And then on the top of it, they'll just hand you one sheet of paper, which has, you know, the education aid for your town is sitting on the top to remind you, you know, that, you know, forget all the other garbage that's in there. But if you vote against this, we're going to hang it over your head. I mean, they have a lot of mechanisms they use to abuse their authority. And I like to point it out. I like to make sure that the people that are watching understand what's happening. And this is what they have a problem with, is the truth. They have the problem with the truth being exposed.
Rob Sampson. Rob, thank you. State Senate member Rob, keep up the good work. And if they tell you to shut up, don't. Keep in there like all night for like 2 or 3 days, Rob. Just run them down for me, okay? Just make him exhausted. Will you do that for me?
I will absolutely do that. It will be my pleasure, Paul. Thank you very much.
All right, Rob, appreciate
it. Out to the people.
Thanks, appreciate it. Thanks, Rob Sampson there, one of the Republican state Senate members. All right, here he is this time every Thursday. Lenny Grimaldi is the guy, the website only in Bridgeport.com. Lenny, how are you, my friend?
So, Uncle Paul, you've been talking about cremation.
Yeah.
And cremation.
Yeah.
There's a new one on the horizon. It's called anchovymation. We're going to burrow your body into a barrel of anchovies.
A leech. You mean a leech?
Into a barrel of anchovies, a leech. And in 3 months, we're going to have this magical pizza topping. It's going to be called anchovy.
Oh, my God.
And I've already contacted all the New Haven pizza houses.
Oh, my God.
And they love the idea. It's called Panchovy. It's a pizza that talks back at you.
Even
when you're gone, you're still going to have a talk show.
Don't you love this bill in Hartford, Lenny, where they're trying to pass a law that says, listen, if you do the terramation thing, you can't sell the soil.
I'm an aquamation man myself.
Oh, yeah? You want to go in the ocean? Is that what it's going to be?
Yeah.
All right. All right.
So what are we doing today?
Well, what are we doing? Now, let me ask you this. Who in their right mind wants to be a school superintendent, Lenny, in Bridgeport? Please explain that. I know there's applicants. I know somebody will take the job. But how many have we had in how many years? I mean, this is just nuts here.
Well, there's a simple answer. The person who wants the job realizes that no one else wants it. So why not apply?
And the money's good. The money's what? Two and change a year?
$300K. Yeah, whatever. Yeah, so, yeah, there's search has started for a police chief. For a superintendent of schools.
Yeah.
You got Carmela Levy-David.
Yep.
You know, that was a mess. That lasted about 15, 16 months. Mm-hmm. She had a big battle with the school system and the Board of Education. They didn't get along. They blew her out. And they put in Rice Avery, who was the deputy superintendent, and he's been serving as acting superintendent since her departure.
Yeah.
You know, my sense, he would have to be the leading horse.
Mm-hmm.
But he's been on the job for several months now. He seems to be well-liked. He's getting out in the community quite a bit, you know, going into different neighborhoods and reaching out to people, you know, basically bringing the, you know, what goes on in the school system to the people. He's actually now is going to be doing in housing projects throughout the city. So there'll be some others. It'll be a 2-3 month process. Mm-hmm. I think they're looking at maybe June to make it. So, but you know, Mike says he'd have to be the leading person at this point. So, but I dare say there might probably be, you know, a bunch who will apply and they'll whittle it down to, you know, maybe a half a dozen and then stick with Roy Savory. I could be wrong.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, the governor and Charlene Russell Tucker, the state education commissioner, they're going to have a hand in this, are they not?
Oh yeah, they have skin in the game. And one of the directives that the governor and the state board of education issued was that they're going to have sign off on this.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely the governor has skin in the game to try to, you know, get his arms around and you know, state education officials get their arm around, you know, what's going on. And part of that, as you noted earlier, is okay, boys and girls, we all have to get along, right?
I know. This is
we stopped the food fights in the Board of Education. So there's going to be some training. And they probably got started them. I think there's going to be...
They should... Lenny, they should get like a bunch of like sixth graders from one of the Bridgeport schools and have them do a presentation one night in front of the Board of Ed. Here's how we learn to get along. And just do it, right? Just do it.
Are you smarter than a sixth grader? We got something going here.
Yeah. A member of the city council, Mr. Grimaldi, is currently having a back and forth with law enforcement and a judge about what should be the disposition of her case. What's up with that?
Yeah, so City Councilwoman Aneida Martinez, this is 5 years in the making,
yeah.
Okay? So during COVID, she was running a late-night establishment, apparently against COVID rules and regulations, and so she was charged with violating pandemic restrictions at a club on the east side of Bridgeport.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that night, someone got killed. Someone was shot to death, and there's been a recent trial on it. The judge said we have to put a hold on this because there were some issues with evidence and witnesses and so on. But she was not charged in any of that. But this has been hanging out there for a couple of years, about 5 years now. And, she tried to get accelerated rehabilitation. The judge rejected that and said, listen, I'm going to, here's my recommendation of what you should accept let's settle this thing. And so her lawyer is really, really good, John Goulart. She's one of the best in the business, asked for a continuance so they could think the thing over. I don't really know the details of what was offered because the judge did not make that public. So that's something only they know. I think Goulash is his goal is how am I going to keep my client, out of prison?
Oh, yeah.
Right. So the question is, what kind of offer did the judge make and what would be any kind of do they take it? I mean, it sounds like he doesn't want to take this thing to trial. Right. So let's see if we can take our medicine on this thing without doing any time. She's a city council person from the East End. And the judge felt that because of her public standing that, I'm just not going to let you off on accelerated rehabilitation. So we'll see what happens next week in court. I think the 28th will be back in court.
And finally, Lenny, the no confidence vote by the rank and file, the Bridgeport Police Union against Chief Roderick Porter. We've discussed this a couple of times since the announcement of the vote came about a week or two ago. Your point was, listen, it's just kind of a statement they want to make, no long-term effects. Are you still kind of standing by that, do you think? That's the analysis here?
Yeah, the police union chief, Michael Salem, he's called on the chief to resign. I mean, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
He said if he doesn't resign, then the mayor should fire him. That's not happening.
No.
So they have some grievances. I mean, the grievances include how the chief implements overtime, assignments, and promotions, and so on. About 150 members of the union voted no confidence, 27 backed the chief. But another 150 or so eligible to vote did not cast a ballot.
What does that mean?
For me, anytime someone is cranked up, against somebody, they're going to come out and vote, right?
Yeah.
So I think the union chief says, hey, listen, don't read too much into that. People have other responsibilities during the day. And so I don't read too much into it. So he's happy with the result. But, okay. That's got to be a factor. 150 people, members of the union did not vote. So Porter is 2.5 years through his 5-year appointment. The mayor has the authority to appoint him to one more 5-year term.
Yep.
The mayor has repeatedly said publicly he supports the chief. I think what will happen is, and by the way, this is not new. This happens. This has happened a lot.
Oh, sure.
They have a scratching relationship with the rank and file.
Yeah.
And there's a vote of no confidence. This chief has been, the brightest bulb for law enforcement in Bridgeport. He's a very good community chief. The union says, hey, he may be good communicator with the residents, but he's not communicating with us. And I think the you know, one of the knocks on the chief is that he's really regimented to doing the job. He's not into the politics of the building.
No.
Some people might hear that, taxpayers, and say, good, right? That's what we need.
He doesn't let me do my job. Right. Just let me do my job. He's really not interested in massaging, you know, bruised egos. So I think probably what will happen is, that the mayor or someone from the mayor's office will sit down with the chief and say, hey, listen, see if you can smooth this thing over with the union as best you can. Reach out a little bit more.
Yeah.
Is he gonna do that? I don't know. I think he'll probably make a pass at it. But in my sense is the mayor is going to back them up. And in the short term, I don't see anything changing. Will the friction continue? Possibly will. But, you know, this, from my perspective, from a distance and talking to people, this chief is well-liked by the public.
Mm. Finally, got to ask you in about the minute we have left, your old boss, Mr. Trump, and the big chair in the Oval Office there. He seems to have the other side kind of reeling here, Lenny. They're mad at him, but they kind of don't know what to do here from a tactical point of view. What's it look like?
They're stuck.
Yeah.
Because he's got everything. He's got the House. He's got the Senate. You know, and even with him, he could be very well defy the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
And if he does, what are they going to do to him?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think his perspective, he's in a pretty good negotiating position, you know, and there is a method to his madness. I think he wants the country to suffer from the worst case of Stockholm syndrome in history. We've all been captured by the president of the United States and we're terrified of what he's going to do. And he's going to do something really nice. And then he'll say, hey, they'll love me forever. I'm not kidding.
you should know. Lenny Grimaldi, the guy, the website only in Bridgeport.com. Lenny, be good. Have a good weekend. We'll chat next week. Thank you, sir.
See you next week. Thank you.
Appreciate it. There you go. Yeah, Stockholm Syndrome. There you go. Look it up.